Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch. Is your mining operation happening ready? Take control of your own future with the right energy strategy. Linkcoin Energy Trading Platform is a tool used by miners to design, monitor, and seamlessly orchestrate sophisticated energy strategies within electricity markets such as ERCOT, New York, and PJM. Avoid penalties, participate in demand response programs, and capture hundreds of thousands of dollars per megawatt per year by deploying the right block and index strategy. Secure your competitive edge at linkcoin.com. Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. We have a news roundup for you today, and it's a little bit different. We're actually not going to go through like a bunch of different headlines. We will have that in our newsletter, so go subscribe below in our show notes. That newsletter just came out. Today, we're going to take a different road and go through the biggest subject of the week. That is the beef between Ocean Pool and Samurai Wallet. And we have Samurai Wallet here today on the show. So welcome to the show, Samurai.
Thank you for the invite, Will. Happy to be here.
Yeah, super excited for this one. Charlie's also here, by the way,
Charlie. And hello, Charlie.
Hello, longtime Samurai Wallet user here. Happy to meet them in person.
I feel bad. It's 2 weeks in a row. I didn't say hi to Charlie immediately when the show started. But we'll say hi to Matt, who's not here today. He's traveling once again. So we'll catch up with Matt next week. Okay, we'll jump right into it. Ocean Pool debate is still swirling around, if you will. Last 2-3 weeks, Ocean Pool launched. They weren't going to censor inscriptions. They were kind of shadowy about what they thought about inscriptions. And I even talked to Luke at the event, and he said pools should not censor inscriptions. And then a little bit later, the Ocean Pool Twitter account put out information that they are going to do that. They are going to censor these inscriptions. That led to a bunch of ramifications, people going through the code, looking at knots. And we found out that Samurai is now going to have some issues because of the knots implementation. And therefore, it's going to have problems with Ocean Pool using Samurai transactions. So Samurai, I'll hand it over to you. Just kind of lay the groundwork for what's going on with this whole kerfuffle this week.
Sure. So on the 6th of December, one of our longtime users, Diverter, who would be known to some of you mining folks, took a look at the Ocean filter criteria and discovered that because Ocean is going to filter over 42 bytes of op return data, certain Samurai transactions would be filtered as well. I guess the intent is to filter out inscriptions and ordinal stuff, even though most inscriptions and ordinal stuff isn't using op return, it's using pay to taproot outputs. But that was the goal. So we didn't jump to conclusions. We didn't think immediately that this was, you know, some kind of intentional thing that Ocean and Luke were doing to Samurai in particular, just that we were kind of, you know, being impacted by this desire to filter transactions. So we didn't make a public statement about it other than to confirm that, yes, we use 46 bytes of op return data in one of our transaction types. So we would be filtered by the 42 byte rule. But I immediately sent a message over to Jack asking him, hey, what's this about? And, you know, can we have a talk with the Ocean guys about this? I didn't hear back from them or from him until much later. And it was only after, well, I guess I should preface this by saying Luke has me blocked on Twitter, so I can't see what he's saying without going into like, incognito mode or, you know, a Nitter instance or something. And So I wasn't saying anything publicly about this. I did recognize that we would be blocked or filtered out of Ocean, but I was waiting to get more information. Then someone pointed me to a tweet from Luke saying that Whirlpool or Samurai transactions are non-standard and contain a bug, and that's why they're being filtered out. And at this point, you know, I had to make a public statement because that's outrageous and not true. So that's when I made that the post that has done fairly well and got people, you know, talking about this thing. And it was a simple post saying, you know, our privacy enhancing transactions are going to be filtered out of Ocean. We haven't seen this type of, you know, explicit form of censorship from even the mining pools that are only doing OFAC compliant blocks and, you know, all of that stuff. This is kind of like a new level. And Luke is saying that our transactions are non-standard and buggy based on, you know, a fork that only Luke maintains. It's ridiculous. And so, you know, this is why the post, this is why I made the public statement. And he continues to double down on this, that our transactions are non-standard and buggy due to a 46 byte op return in one of our transactions when he only recognizes 42 bytes. And of course, we all know that the default standard is 80 bytes, according to Bitcoin Core. You want me to keep going? Because there's still some more to it.
Keep going. I want to kind of like, let you talk through this a bit more. I think, just keep going for me.
They gave me a little bit of laugh right there about Luke saying you guys are non-standard and then he's running like this tiny little node, but keep going. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So essentially Luke runs Bitcoin Knots. It's his fork of Bitcoin Core. And, you know, and that's, he's totally entitled to do that. Like I said, in my post, you know, he can set it to 0 bytes if he wants to, it's totally up to him. But for him to say that the transaction is non-standard or buggy or both of those things, which he said is outrageous and it's a lie. If these were non-standard transactions, they wouldn't be mined and you wouldn't be able to build blocks on top of them. So they are, you know, they are standard. After the post did, you know, fairly well, like I said, it got a lot of attention, a lot of engagement. Jack did actually respond to my initial message and, you know, said, let me set up a, you know, he said they didn't mean to do this. This wasn't intentional. And they want to work with you to solve this problem. And I said, oh, that's good to hear. I don't know how they're going to work with me when they have me blocked. But if you want to relay them my email address, we can schedule a call and we can talk about this. So to his credit, he did get my email address over to the president of Ocean, who reached out fairly quickly and scheduled a call for later that evening. This was yesterday. And they requested that we provide them details of what we are doing with the op return, which I found a little odd because, to be honest, that's none of their damn business. It doesn't matter what we're doing with the op return. But in the spirit of good faith, we sent them a description of what we're doing with the op return and why we're doing it for the transaction that we're making. I'm not going to go into the details because it's, you know, it's kind of in the weeds, but we sent them a long email with all the information that they requested. And, you know, I made it clear to them as well that this call was not to be a negotiation. We're not going to change our architecture and our, you know, for something that has been working since 2018 for them, but we will discuss with them how they can, you know, quote unquote, whitelist these transactions since they said they had a desire to not censor them. They said, okay. And this call was scheduled for 7 hours later. So the call happened last night. It lasted maybe about 4 minutes. Introductions were made. It was
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Yeah. It was the president. It was Luke, their lawyer, and some other person. I don't remember who. Found it a little strange that their lawyer was there, but I said, okay, we'll go on with this. We reiterated that we had sent the information they requested about the op return. And the single question they asked, I believe it was Luke who asked, is it encrypted? Well, we were kind of, you know, shocked by this because this was clearly laid out in the email that we sent. Of course, yes, it's encrypted, the op return, with the following data that we told them about. And we said, yes, it's encrypted. And he says, oh, well, then we won't be able to tell the difference between your transactions and ordinal transactions. So I again said, well, we don't want to waste time. If this is, you know, we're not going to change what we're doing. So if you're not going to determine whether they can be let in, then we should end this call. Their lawyer then started to speak and started to lecture us on how to properly create CoinJoin transactions, which is something we've been doing again since 2018, and tried to explain that because we use this op return, it's very obvious that this is a CoinJoin transaction, which I told them, with all due respect, sir, you have no idea what you're talking about. A CoinJoin transaction is obvious on chain with or without an op return, due to the nature of the CoinJoin transaction. It's an equal output CoinJoin. And second, the op return isn't part of the CoinJoin. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense what you're saying. He then tried to recite, I kid you not, a portion of the Bushido code to us, thinking that, you know, we're like really into Japanese culture or samurai culture or something. We laughed in his face and I hung up. So that was the end of that conversation. So it was clear that it was not a good faith conversation. There was no intent to, you know, work out an arrangement or a technical discussion. We were going to be, you know, I likened it to some sort of strange struggle session. And, you know, no thank you. So we left that call and, you know, we'll just... Sorry, my dog just barked into my office. We left it there.
That is incredible. Did that all actually happen? They brought their lawyer on to tell you about coin joints?
Yes,
are you serious?
I want my lawyer to know about coin joint.
Well, you know, my lawyer.
How much
my lawyer does know a lot about coin joints. If I had known that we were going to have our lawyer, like a lawyer present, I would have brought mine and let them battle it out together. But, you know, we thought this was going to be a technical discussion. We thought it was going to be a good faith discussion on how, you know, Ocean can, again, their word, whitelist our transactions. I disagree with the whole premise. I've told them that. I told Jack as well. I was like, this is a really ill-advised kind of slippery slope you're going down, but it's your pool. You do what you want to do with it. And, you know, again, I reiterated that I don't want to waste time. So this isn't a negotiation. We're not going to change what we're doing. And, you know, it was late for one of us. It was like 2:30 in the morning, but we waited up and did the whole thing. And honestly, it was worth it because it's hilarious. It's actually hilarious that their lawyer tried to, one, like, you know, explain coin joins to us and got it completely wrong. And two, recite the Bushido code to us. Like, it's so weird.
It's a good code, but I mean,
yeah,
but that's interesting because one of the marketing points for the pool is that it's non-KYC. This kind of represents some of the strongest cohort of advocates for privacy. This is very much the samurai wallet ethos. Like, where do you think the disconnect is? And do you think it's a Luke and a Knots thing? I mean, what do you think is going on here? Like, why?
It's definitely a Luke and a Knots thing. I don't know how much involvement in operations that Jack has. I think he's just an investor and kind of like, you know, disconnected from it. But certainly the lawyer and the other brain dead that was on there were just parroting Luke talking points. So they, you know, Luke is the head honcho over there, CTO, and whatever Luke says is gospel to them. Even, you know, and anyone who's dealt with Luke for any extended period of time knows that he has a very unique way of looking at things. That, well, a lot of the time they're, you know, they're lies. The way he, for example, calling our transactions non-standard and buggy. You know, in his head, that's true. But then you dig and you say, well, what is non-standard about it? It's like, well, they don't conform to my standard. You know, it's Luke's standard, which is 42 bytes. It's Luke's standard, you know, that we don't conform to. Therefore, by Luke's standard, we're buggy and non-standard. So, you know, I think that's where the disconnect is. And when we tried to explain again that the op return was not part of the coin join transaction, and this was the lawyer and Luke's main point, is, oh, you shouldn't be using an op return in coin join for whatever reason. And okay, yeah, we agree. We don't use an op return in coin join. We use it in the pre coin join transaction. And the reason we do it is to make a coin join that has zero deterministic links, that is able to separate out in various derivations. And it's to make sure that the coordinator is being paid without us having to operate a centralized database of, you know, these are paid or these aren't paid, you know, and we can argue and debate whether op return should be used for that. But none of that suggests that it's non-standard and buggy. It's just, yeah.
It's so wild. Okay, I want to put Charlie on the spot for a second, because Charlie, like, your face changed a little bit during that conversation when Samurai said that Luke saw the encrypted data, or Luke's code would see the encrypted data in a very similar manner to how it sees inscriptions. So why did you make that face, or like, what were you hearing there?
I mean, I'm not a developer. I don't work in Bitcoin script. I mean, to me, so inscriptions do not go in the op return. They do not use part of the op return. There are various like meta protocols which are as inscription ordinals adjacent, which are using op return right now. So, and I'm not familiar with really how you differentiate crypto, something which is encrypted versus not. But like, inscriptions go in a totally different part of the Bitcoin data layer, if you call it that. So. Maybe I'm naive or am missing something, but I mean, I bet you, I feel like I could determine whether a transaction was an inscription or not. Or
absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely. They have a very, so our, we call them TX0s, and it's because it's the zero with transaction before the coin join. They have a very, very unique footprint. You can tell a TX0. From a typical ordinal or BRC20 transaction. You don't need to filter by the op return if you want to, you know, determine whether something is a TX0 or not. So it would be very easy to do for them. They clearly do not want to do it.
You know, just maybe a little history on Luke's Bitcoin knots, and I'm not the person to do it. I don't know if you are, Samurai Wallet.
But you're on the show.
Like, it's funny because, like, I did not expect going into 2023 that anyone except, like, OGs who like Bitcoin history would even mention Bitcoin knots ever again. And here we are, front and center in the conversation. I don't know. Like, how did it come to be? And I don't know, why would, I guess this might be self-evident, but why would a mining pool use it over just their own custom config of Bitcoin Core? I wonder this.
Yeah. So I think, it came about, because Luke disagreed with certain changes or certain decisions that Bitcoin Core were making. And this goes back to like 2013, 2014, I think. So he wanted to maintain his own, custom implementation, but remain in consensus, not like a network split or anything like that. So he created Bitcoin knots. I actually, one of the main drivers for this, I'm just remembering now, was Luke is a big fan of the tonal numbering system. He does not like the the typical numbering system that every human uses. He likes a numbering system called Tonal, and Bitcoin Knots was a way, and Bitcoin Core were obviously resistant to adding Tonal numbering system into the Bitcoin client. So
wait, what do you, what can you explain Tonal for a second? Does that mean,
yeah,
like,
this God. Is cardinal, this is totally new to me. This is yet ordinal. Another part of the lore here.
Is this like going back to, like, you know, elementary school? You had like cardinal.
So it's numbering. Tonal system is base 16 system of notation.
Oh, okay, okay. So that's different. Okay.
Yeah, and they, you know, there's different numbers for the. I have to pick look it up on Wikipedia because, you know, I'm a normal person. But you know, so the base 16 number would be 10. The base, So in 10, R10 would be called ton. T-O-N in Tonal, and then 100 is san, 1,000 is mil, then there's bong, tong bong, san bong, mil bong. So he wanted to bring this numbering system into Bitcoin. Obviously, there was resistance from anyone sane saying, no, we have a hard enough time explaining what Bitcoin is in general. Now you want to introduce a new numbering system. So, like he's supposed to, and, you know, do, he created a fork and, you know, incorporated his Tonal system into that fork. And that's kind of where the genesis of Knots came from, if I recall it correctly. He's not using it anymore. I'm not sure why, what changed for him. But that was the goal. And again, fine, you know, more power to you. Why it's being used now? Well, it's Luke's, you know, it's Luke's pool. So he can use whatever he's going to want to use, and he wants to use his own thing. And then it's also used in Wasabi Wallet. They use Bitcoin Knots by default for, I believe the reason they did it was they rely on block filters, and Bitcoin Core still doesn't have block filters enabled by default, where Knots does. So they went with Knots because they could ship that node within their software and have the block filter enabled without having to tell their users, go and change this configuration. Da, da, da. So it's those two. And if you look like on Bitnodes, there's very, very small number of Knots nodes out there in the wild. Very small.
But it's more than one. Yeah.
Yeah, there's more than one.
It's like around 200 according to Luke's numbers.
Well, Luke, again, Luke's numbers are very different from everyone else's numbers. He has a different way of counting, and he doesn't explain exactly how he's counting him.
His numbers literally are different there. He's totally
Yes, they are literally different. But yeah, there's a very big difference between what bitnodes.io says and what Luke says in terms of knots. I think Bitcoin bitnodes.io is like in the 50 to 60 range right now. Okay. And yeah, and Luke's numbers are like 200 or something like that. So users aren't using knots, you know. And most users are using Core. And if you're not using Core, then you're using some other, like, you know,
just Libitcoin.
Yeah, Libitcoin, exactly. Yeah.
So I want to bring up like the cultural part of this. The privacy crowd in Bitcoin is a huge cohort. It's not the biggest by any means, but it's a big cohort in the Bitcoin scene. You got like the miners, then you've got kind of like plebs, then you got like some like Laser HODL 69 out there kind of floating by himself. And then you also have like this new group with the inscriptions. And what we're seeing right now with Ocean Pool in an odd way is bringing this privacy group and this inscription group into alignment in terms of its incentives.
Definitely.
Do you see it that way? And how are you thinking about that in the long term? Do you think that's going to be something that crosses over more and more? Or is it just like this one instance where like the incentives are very aligned against what's happening with filtering?
Well, I think if you're into the privacy side of things, you have to be, unfortunately, on the side of the inscription guys, because if Bitcoin is not censorship resistant, it's nothing. You know, to me, the value proposition of Bitcoin is censorship resistance. And if it's not censorship resistance, we're wasting our time. I'm not one of the guys that are like, oh, it's, you know, number go up is coded into the protocol and all this bullshit, you know, that's what I consider it to be, is BS. I don't know much about inscriptions. I've never, you know, done one. I know one of the earliest inscriptions was a image of the Whirlpool logo. I don't know who did that, but that was really early on. And I think it sold for like a lot of Bitcoin. But you know, so you have to be on the side of censorship resistance, and you can't be on the side of this filtering and trying to, you know, get these people to go somewhere else. They're here. And if they want to make their transactions, they're paying fees, then that's what it is. I don't have a problem with it other than, yeah, it makes fees go up, and higher fees means less people are going to use my services. You know, less people are going to CoinJoin. Then maybe when miner fees are like 1 sat, you'll get a bunch of people coin joining. And now miner fees are, you know, more than that. Generally you get slightly less, but that's, you know, that's just the name of the game. We should have expected this. So I think it's going to be, a strange union, but it's a union nonetheless.
There's a lot of like optics considerations here for, I think, many, many parties. Like, people have built the narrative about who they are, what, you know, company they operate for, like they think Bitcoin is, for many years. And now we see this weird, Casey threw a smoke bomb in the room, and it's like clear, and everybody's like standing on opposite sides of the room. And here we are, where these like historically NFT degens are now becoming like weirdly like privacy pilled and like freedom pilled while wanting to also keep degening their JPEGs. And here they are like amplifying the Samurai Wallet scenario. And I just could not have ever predicted that we would be here when I was getting down into the, you know, I was enjoying the numbering of Satoshis is kind of what brought me to this. And here we are. And it's this, contentious situation. I don't know, Samurai, can you just reflect on, this kind of weird cultural evolution we've seen in Bitcoin the past 10 months and what it might look like as fees go up, Bitcoin gets more interesting and more dynamic to use. Where do you think Samurai goes over the next 2 or 3 years?
Sure. Well, you know, for me, the cultural shift has been over like the last 6 years. When I got involved in Bitcoin, it was late 2012, early 2013. And we were still, most people were still about censorship resistance, privacy. You know, there was still hope that we might someday get confidential transactions on chain. We might, you know, that's where the headspace was. With each, you know, subsequent run up in price, that message got diluted down to the point where, you know, you have the laser eyes and you have all these guys who they have no idea what they're here for other than increasing their net worth. You know, they think that dollar cost averaging $20 into Bitcoin every month is going to make them a millionaire soon, you know, and that's their whole outlook on Bitcoin. And it's just completely and utterly contrary to ours. We don't jive. We don't see eye to eye on things. And it's sad because with that increase of that type of person, you know, it went from, oh, maybe one day we'll have confidential transactions on chain to there's absolutely no way in hell we can have confidential transactions on chain because that would be, you know, that would kill the price. That would kill this and that. No one would allow that. The government would smack down, crack down on it, this and that. So, you know, you said earlier, Will, that there's a large privacy contingent, but it's not that large. It's pretty small. And it's niche, and that's usually true for, you know, privacy communities. It's a niche thing. I think ultimately the overlap that you're talking about with the NFT stuff or the ordinals mm-hmm. inscriptions, if these people get brought into the fold and start to see, well, look, they're a group that are being actively censored. You know, we didn't think it was going to come from the Bitcoin side, but they are a group that are being actively censored. So they are starting to see the importance of censorship resistance and the importance of tools like Samurai, who all we do, we don't deal with Lightning. We're all about on-chain. All we're about is increasing your on-chain privacy, you know, and I I think it's great. And if that can increase the number of users who care about privacy, especially on chain, awesome. You know, I don't know enough about ordinals. I don't know enough about inscriptions to, you know, have any particular, you know, product related ideas, but certainly have been brainstorming, like, how can I get these people into our ecosystem? You know, how can we marry Whirlpool CoinJoin with numbered sats, right? Like, could it be some sort of weird casino thing where you go in and you have no idea what number you're going to get out, or, you know, like, there's all sorts of things that just floated around my head, because these are economic participants in this system. And it makes zero sense to me to just say, oh, I disapprove of what you're doing, so I'm going to figure out ways to blackball you. It's ridiculous.
It's really interesting, because more users increases the anonymity set. And another kind of thought I have, which is really interesting, which actually goes back into ordinal history here, which is, if you're familiar with this game of, like, acquiring, you know, special Satoshis of interest, people are, you know, many are critical of it because, like, you know, they're like, well, why, you know, it breaks Bitcoin's fungibility. It's a very good criticism. But what's interesting is the mechanism of, like, sifting through Bitcoin and panning Bitcoin is pretty simple and dumb. You just send your Bitcoin back and forth to an exchange. But originally, Casey, prior to even launching this, was kind of spitballing ways of, like, how could you sift through various UTXOs? And one of his thoughts was, well, it would make sense to CoinJoin. And in such a case, you have this weird incentive where CoinJoining becomes both a privacy endeavor and one which is, like, aligned with kind of the weird, like, degenerate direction of, like, procuring these different UTXOs, which may have, you know, sats in them of interest. So I don't know. I just think about that. And it's one of the things I keep trying to point people to. I'm like, hey, try coin joining some of your stuff. You might find it actually fun or profitable or a fun game, and you're increasing the anonymity set. I think these are all things which can be incredibly useful. And it's one of those weird ways of, like, something which we never anticipated, which seems kind of frivolous and speculative, can actually have a net good impact. So that's just kind of a random thought that I was...
No, I think that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you know, again, not 100% on all of these details, but that was my understanding that, you know, if you coin joined one of these UTXOs that I guess has either a rare sat or some sort of inscription, you know, you can't guarantee where it's going to end up in terms of... you know, what index it is, you can guarantee that you're going to own it at the other side. But yeah, what can we do? Because again, these are economic participants, and, you know, why push people away from using your stuff, whether that is Whirlpool, Samurai, or just Bitcoin in general. But I know I'm probably in the minority on that in terms of the Bitcoin, the general Bitcoin community. I don't really know. I don't even see it ultimately as a harm on fungibility, because it's just an external counting system. You know, it's the counting system that's popular, but other counting systems could come into play, and you could have competing counting. So Luke could come up with a counting system in Tonal.
That's what he's probably trying to do here.
Tonals, or whatever. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask that question. Luke has talked about inscriptions a lot, tweeted about it a lot since February, saying it's bad for Bitcoin. And one of the reasons he brought it up was, by giving number ranking to Satoshis, you can break the fungibility or weaken the fungibility of individual Satoshis. You seem to think that's not a really big issue because it's external to the system. Is there a point where you would see that being a concern? Like, if this market did grow, we saw, you know, rare sats or uncommon sats starting to trade for a lot more money. I guess, suppose they are, like, right now on, like, OTC exchanges.
Yeah, not, I mean, still not really. I mean, I think there are much bigger issues, you know, actually on chain in the blockchain to harm user privacy than an external, you know, numbering system for, you know, ordinals that, yeah, deterministic links. You know, the ability to say with 100% certainty that this input is connected to this output, that's a real serious issue on chain. And that's a serious issue that is, you know, being chain surveillance companies are using this ability to provide actual evidence to the government in criminal cases. People are being convicted today based on this, you know, these links, these deterministic links. And that's what Samurai is all about. It's breaking deterministic links. And that's why I got so, you know, so angry during the phone call that we had with Luke and Ocean, you know, because they're giving us this nonsense, you know, diatribe on how we shouldn't use op returns and this and that. And the reason we use op returns is so we can offer a CoinJoin implementation, the only CoinJoin implementation on Bitcoin that is 100% going to break deterministic links. Wasabi doesn't do it. Join Market doesn't do it. Only Samurai does it. And it's because partly due to that design decision to have the op return in the TX0. You know, so when they attack that, it's a fundamental attack on Bitcoin users' privacy. When they call that a bug, it's a fundamental attack. And that's why I take it very seriously and very, you know, personally. And that's why I went so hard at Ocean and Luke. And I will continue to do so. You know, it's war now. You know, they made it very clear that they're not willing to work together. They're not here in good faith. They want nothing to do with what we're doing. So there's only one way you can fight against that, and it's going to be convincing people not to use Ocean, convincing miners to take their hash and put it somewhere else. And that's partly why I posted today that in the first week of December, our users in these op return transactions have spent a total of almost half a Bitcoin in miners fees. Ocean miners are not going to be able to have access to that half of Bitcoin because they filter out those transactions. And if you're a rational economic actor, why would you do that? You know, I know it's a small number compared to the ordinals and all of this stuff, but the privacy community is small and we grow every day. But half of Bitcoin is half of Bitcoin in a week. You know, why wouldn't you want to earn those fees?
Definitely. I mean, looking at Ocean Pool right now, they're about 400 petahash. They've dropped a little bit. I think they peaked at 550 petahash, and that's like a rough estimate, right? Because they're kind of backing out those numbers, but that's on their publicly available dashboard. The nice thing is apparently non-KYC. It's compared to like the Foundries of the world, and you have to be KYC in those instances. Where would you point people towards besides our favorite pool, Luxor, because Charlie's on the show? Where would you point people towards?
You know, again, I'm not so up on the different pools, this and that. I know Luxor, we've chatted. I think Charlie seems like a cool guy. I would say check out Luxor. I know there's Lincoin as well. And the reason I mentioned them is because they actually allow payouts to a BIP47 address, which we were the first wallet to introduce BIP47 stealth addresses into Bitcoin. So the way, you know, Lincoin is able to use this technology means that the miner doesn't have to either provide an XPub so that new address can be used every time, or doesn't have to provide a single static address that can then you can watch on the blockchain and see how much this one miner has actually earned. It brings in stealth addressing, which is a great use of stealth addressing for miner pools. So there's Lincoin. I think there's plenty of non-KYC pools out there. I don't think, you know, Foundry is that model is the predominant model. It's probably the most popular right now. But I think most of the pools are non-KYC.
Nice. Hey, let's wrap up there. Thank you for joining us on the show and giving us that scoop on what happened this week. That was definitely one of the more interesting things, if not the most interesting thing that happened on Bitcoin Twitter this week. So Samurai, thanks for your time and thanks for joining, Charlie.
Thanks for having me.
This was a fascinating conversation.
Super good. Super good. If you enjoyed it, make sure to subscribe, hit that subscription on YouTube, give us a like, comment, go follow Samurai Wallet on Twitter and go download their software and use their software. It's important for Bitcoin privacy. And if you want to get more updates on Bitcoin mining news this week, give us a subscription in our newsletter. Okay, we'll see you guys next week.